The Holy Gospel according to Luke, the 12th chapter. Glory to you, O Lord. Someone in the crowd said to Jesus, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." Then he said to him, "Friend, who set me to be a judge or arbiter over you?" And he said to them, "Take care. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions." Then he told them a parable. The land of a rich man produced abundantly, and he thought to himself, "What should I do, for I have no place to store my crops?" Then he said, "I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and all my goods. And I will say to my soul, 'Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your life is being demanded of you. And the things you have prepared, whose will they be?' So it is with those who store up treasures for themselves, but are not rich toward God." The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. You may be seated. The Lord, may the words of my mouth and the meditation of each of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. A father knocks on his daughter's door about 4 a.m. in order to help her begin the process of buying a new car. She tells him that she already has things covered through the new Capital One Auto Navigator, which has made the process of buying a car simple. After the daughter rejects the father's offer of help, he says, "So, who wants French toast?" The daughter then turns to the camera and says, "What's in your wallet?" What's in your wallet? Capital One's tagline is supposed to give the impression that their credit cards are the best, and you are missing out if you don't have one. You are missing out on double miles, double points, extra cash back, and fraud protection, as well as easier access to the car of your dreams. Capital One loves to cast celebrities in its commercials, people such as Jennifer Garner, Eugene and Sarah Levy, and Samuel L. Jackson. They expect you to identify with these individuals, or at least identify with them by having something that they have, that card in your wallet. Jackson said in one commercial, "Unlimited and easy. What else do you need to know?" Well, what else do you need to know? Jesus said, "Take care. Be on guard against all kinds of greed, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions." Jesus repeatedly tells people to give away what they have and follow him. What he is saying is to trust in God rather than in the accumulation of material wealth. One day, our very lives will be required of us. And then, what good are all our material possessions? "I saw all the deeds that are done under the sun, and see, all is vanity and a chasing after wind," we heard in our first lesson. We are told, "Vanity of vanities, all is vanity." That which is the work of our hands rather than the work of God is nothing but vanity. This is echoed in our song for today, Psalm 49, when we are told that all people die. Cheery, isn't it? "For we see that the wise die also, like the dull and stupid, they perish and leave their wealth to those who come after them. Even though honored, they cannot live forever." There's an old saying that you probably heard, "You'll never see a U-Haul behind a hearse." We cannot bring our worldly possessions with us when we die. In our gospel reading, Jesus tells a parable about a rich man whose farms yield abundant crops. He looked at his fabulous wealth and, seeing that his barns were inadequate to hold all of the grain, decided to tear down the barns and build bigger ones. He looked at his wealth and said, "Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry." But God said to him, "You fool! This very night your life is demanded of you, and the things that you have prepared, whose will they be? vanity of vanities. All is but vanity and a chasing after wind. We need to read the last line of our gospel lesson carefully. It says, "So it is with those who store up treasures for themselves, but are not rich toward God." God is not condemning shrewd farming techniques or business dealings. God is not condemning the acquisition of possessions per se. The problem shown in this parable, the reason that the rich man is called a fool, is that he is acting in isolation. He is a fool because he seems to live only for himself, believing that he can secure his life with his abundant possessions. When he talks to himself, the only person he refers to is himself. "What should I do? I have no place to store my crops. I will do this. I will pull down my barns. I will build bigger ones. Then I will store up all my grain." He does not realize that his wealth could bless others. He is oblivious to the fact that he lives in community. He seems to have no awareness of what God is calling him to do with his abundance. It is his attitude that is the problem. The parable is condemning a mindset that is focused on me, me, me. The rich fool fails to realize that his material wealth is simply entrusted to him for a time. It is greed that is being condemned. Greed that turns people inward to focus on themselves, on what is best for themselves in this mortal life, with no regard to the things of God. It is greed that convinces us that no matter how much we have, there are always things we don't have. And that's what the "What's in Your Wallet" campaign and all other advertising campaigns are trying to convince us, that there are more material things that we need in order to have a better, richer, more complete life. And with that sort of mindset, we will never have enough. When you look in your wallet, what do you see? What does it tell you about yourself? "This is mine. If I look in it, I'll find a driver's license. That tells me and others who I am and how old I am, for those times when age really does matter. I'll find a credit card, some debit cards, my COVID vaccination record, my AAA and AARP cards, my library cards. I'll find some cash, some receipts of recent purchases, a few store loyalty cards, some stamps, undoubtedly checks I haven't deposited yet, my voided California driver's license because I finally applied for a Wyoming one. I'll find a couple of business cards, a few gift cards, and a meal ticket for the Buffalo Senior Center that I won one of the times during the Monday bingo held during lunch. Then there are some stitch markers for future knitting projects. A chapstick. You can never have enough chapstick. My wallet tells a bit of a story about my life, but it certainly does not tell my whole life. If you look carefully at what is in my wallet, you'll find out where I live, where I lived in the past, where I work now, where I bank, what I like to buy, what fast food I eat. But you won't find out anything about my husband or my daughters, my pets, or my friends. You won't learn much about my relationship with God. You won't really get to know me by looking at my wallet and what's in it. And for those who wonder, no, I don't have a Capital One card, nor do I intend to obtain one. I've acquired a lot of possessions over the years. I will freely admit that I have difficulty getting rid of things that I have obtained. A lot of that seems to be the result of things that happened in my childhood, where I had very few possessions. We tended to live in a mindset of scarcity, and I seem to still maintain that mindset. The reality then, and my reality now, is that I need a mindset of abundance, that God has given me so much, that all that I have really does come from God, and that God has given me material possessions to steward them for a time. For the day will come when my very being will be demanded of me. When that time comes, will God be able to say to me, You have been rich toward me. You have stored up treasures in heaven that far surpass what you stored up on earth. What's in your wallet is not the real question, ultimately. The real question is, where is your treasure? And can you take it with you when you go? Amen.